Hey, hey, if you're hearing that music, then you know that this is another edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, where we take a look at the real world from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host. And a quick reminder, these shows will also be archived up on ifidknownthen.com, and you can also find them in on the Christian Science webpages. I am just wound out excited about our guest this particular show. It's way out there in my geeky nerd end. For those of you that don't know, I started life as an engineer and then went from engineering with engineering stuff to engineering with metaphysical stuff, and that's kind of been my path. So when I run into more of that that's like bigger and better, it's really exciting. And so our guest today has a PhD in aeronautics, as well as and is a professor of aerospace engineering and mechanics, so in this case it is rocket science, at the University of Alabama. She's also a recognized researcher in the field of bio-inspired flow control and experimental fluid dynamics. Yeah, rattle that one off at a cocktail party. And has been well-funded by the Natural Science Foundation, the Army Department of Defense, and other sources for her research. At the same time, she is a lifelong practicing Christian scientist, so a lifelong practicing in the study of spiritual healing practices, and is bringing that together and actually sort of, I'll say, leading the front end of introducing genuine crossover between meta science and Western science. I am just thrilled to chat. I don't know how we're going to get all this in an hour, but everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Amy Lang. Amy, this is everybody.
Thank you so much for having me, Scout. Appreciate it.
This is just really exciting.
Oh, it's a fascinating and wonderful topic to be talking about today.
Thanks. So in the midst of all the rest of this, just to give people a little more human side, you've also gotten two kids all the way up into college age, and they're now also studying for their degrees, I assume in other directions, but maybe not.
Yeah, not quite in engineering, but they're doing great in their own ways.
Fabulous. This is a piece that I often bring up in the discussion of Christian Science, and because we've got many listeners who are not Christian Science background, as I am not Christian Science backgrounded, I've been getting educated along the way, I like to point out that Christian Science is not the L. Ron Hubbard Scientology, don't get confused, but it's also not just some sort of a whim kind of a thing. It's there. It's been around since Mary Becker Eddy brought this information forward years and years and years ago. But the piece I like to really touch on is that Christian Science and Mary Becker Eddy, who wrote the foundational works, Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture, did not use the word science lightly. It's used in a very real term. So, Amy, can we go from there just to start with, what is it that we think makes something science?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, because so many people today associate science with physical experiments, looking at what matter is telling us and trying to figure out what matter is saying. And I think we need to sort of step back and really question, you know, what the term science really means. It fundamentally is understanding and knowledge about the world around us, and that's definitely true. But there's some qualities of what makes a study or practice scientific. Hopefully something that's scientific is, it means that it's universal and it's repeatable by anybody. You know, we want something that's reliable. And so that's what science definitely is. That it does point to some sort of underlying natural laws, that we can discover that there's a principle to how things work. And that we can apply that principle then reliably. We also hope that science is involved with seeking for truth. And that therefore science is not just a social construct. And yet, if we look at the history of science, there are definite moments in history when the consensus was definitely wrong. For instance, you know, you can go back that it took 300 years for the church to accept that the sun was the center of our solar system. The consensus before that was that it was not, and that was considered a, you know, a scientifically valid perception of the solar system.
It was a given.
Sorry, say that again?
It was a given.
Yeah, it was a given that the Earth was at the center of our solar system. That's what the material senses sort of told us, that the sun was moving around us. And then it took, really scientific discovery to change that. And it wasn't something that changed overnight. But science is something also that can be applied systematically to our human experience. But I think the most fundamental aspect of science, and this is where Mary Baker Eddy was really calling Christian Science scientific, is that it offers empirical evidence or proof. And Jesus was the same way. He said, you know, if I'm going to go out here and do all these wonderful works, don't just believe me because of what I say. Believe me because of the works, these healings, these wonderful demonstrations that I'm doing. And she felt that Christian Science offered that same kind of proof with the healing evidence.
Mm-hmm. And that's really a key piece, is that as I learned about science way, way back, was that a major piece of it was a hypothesis followed by study of the outcomes and whether or not you could generate a repeatable result. And so I was kind of boggled at one of the numbers I saw as I was looking up some information for us to talk today. You mentioned a number of how many documented, I'm going to call it physical transformation other than the normal healing process. No, not accurate. Physical transformations other than what my MD might expect. How many documented testimonials there are of people who have had healings that were outside what our medical science would predict? I don't even know how to word that. Help me out.
Yeah, these healings, these physical healings in Christian Science, very similar to the types of healings that you would read about in the Bible, but again, being repeated today. Mary Baker Eddy, basically in founding Christian Science, was led to start a scientific journal. And then first it was called the Christian Science Journal, and then she started the Christian Science Sentinel, and then also more international ones called the Herald. And here is where people in a scientific community, so, you know, she started a religion, but at the same time, she basically established a scientific community, a community of individuals who were beginning to practice and understand the Christianity that Jesus also practiced with his followers, that basically Mary Baker Eddy had rediscovered that type of practice of Christianity and reliable healing. And she basically, as you said, put forth her discovery in the book Science and Health, A Key to the Scriptures, which she published in 1875, and then began to share that discovery with others, and others began to understand what she had discovered, loved what she discovered, wanted to be disciples of Christ, and went forth and began to heal. And so now we have over 100 years of individuals who have followed this method of healing and have been able to, in basically using their own life as their own sort of laboratory experiment, to apply this type of healing, a method, to their lives and experience healing. And some of these healings are documented medically, others have not been, but we have now over 83,000 of these healings that have been published since 1883.
That's a fair body of work.
It's a very large body of work. It definitely points to the repeatable aspect of Christian Science healing. And it's not just, you know, that one person experiences one healing. It's more if you sometimes look at individuals' lives, even throughout their life, they'll just have a consistent record of having this healing applied, or even generations and families.
So, side question on that. A catchphrase that I like and that I use a lot is that healing is not to be reserved for disease. But I think that's a good point at this point is to actually, now, I am actually thinking that most of those 83,000 you just referenced to had a physical aspect to them, but what's the whole spectrum of how you use the word healing, Amy?
Oh, you know, healing definitely applies, you know, to physical or bodily disorders, but you know, there's also mental issues, relationship issues, financial issues, marriage issues, any discord in an individual's life can come under the ability to pray about that and apply these principles that Mary Baker Eddy gave to us in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, which again was just her discovery of how Jesus healed and how Jesus basically applied the same science in his day, but that we can apply the same principle that's around today. Again, if a principle is a law, it's eternal, it's fixed, it's there for us to use and apply. But I also don't want it to sound cold, because we're going to a principle that is God, and that God is fundamentally love, the love that is governing and guiding and supporting every aspect of his creation, and we can rely on that perfect love.
So maybe the Beatles were right when they said love is all there is.
Love is all there is. In some ways, that's really at the heart of Christian Science, is relying on that perfect love of God, that he loves us and cares for us. But it's something that is completely reliable. And that's something that's a little hard to take in our world today, when we see so much around us that looks like there's not a God in the world. It's hard.
I want to touch on one side topic really quick, Amy, and I don't want to stay there very long, but every now and then the press gets very confused and likes to put forward something about someone where something bad happened, and within their context they indicate that Christian scientists are not allowed to use a doctor if they would like to.
Oh, yeah, that's not, the church or anybody is not telling Christian scientists what to do in their lives. What's wonderful about Christian Science is that it is a very individual practice. It's something that Christian scientists rely on because they've seen it work. It's nobody telling them some authority above them telling them that they have to choose spiritual prayer and medicine as opposed to material medicine. It's very much left to the individual choice. And that's what's so wonderful about it. It's something that you want to do because you've seen it work and you know that it works, and it's a choice, an individual choice that you make based on your own demonstration and faith in having that healing.
And even though the word church is here, and I apologize to anybody that's got like old wounds and scars from that word, I noticed that each individual Christian Science facility, call it a church, that there's not like a bishop or a reverend or a person who's up at the front telling everybody else what the path is for that group and that facility and that particular church, right?
Oh, definitely that's true. I mean, Mary Baker Eddy herself was raised in a congregational church that's much more democratically type run. So she came from that more background of a Christian religion, and she basically followed that model in setting up her church. It's very much each church is democratically run by those individuals, and there's nobody telling what people do. It's very much a loving unity of faith.
Ah, perfect. And I'm jumping topics all over the place, and I can tell, because I'm just all wound up. You've got so much information that I want. I found a quote that says, Mary Baker Eddy found that the opposite of truth, called error, sin, sickness, disease, or death, is the false testimony of false material sense. Just translate for those of us that aren't used to reading her all the time.
Yeah, you know, what she was doing there was referring to her basic discovery in Christian Science. And that was how to explain evil and error. And what is, you know, how do we deal with that? Because that's been a fundamental question of humanity, since the beginning of time. You know, how do we get out of this sense of evil? How do we become better? This search or quest for spirituality, for God, is just innate in us because we just desire to be better, always, you know, seeking for a better life, a better health. That's just so inherent in us. And so Mary Baker Eddy was on that same quest and search for the first half of her life. And at one point she had a very severe human need. She turned to God for healing and found that healing. And in that moment, she began to discern that our life was in spirit, in God, and not in matter. And that matter and error were basically these opposites of a belief of a life separate from God. And so she began to understand that when we see God's allness and God's love, as we talked about earlier, that we can turn to this ever-present, omnipotent love, and suddenly in the face of that, error becomes something that is not from God, And if it's not from God, then it has no definite eternal reality. And as a result of that, we have the authority to overcome that discord. And we overcome that discord by our communion with this divine love. And we can see then that, in fact, the true reality, the eternal reality of who we are and who God made us to be, that's what must prevail. That's what must ultimately heal our experience in some way, whether that's a physical healing, a relationship healing, or whatever seems to be the human need.
Jumping topics some more. This is so funny. I'm usually a little more coordinated. Some long time back, I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Fred Allen Wolf, who is a quantum physicist. In that interview, I looked at Fred because he's got some books that are sort of at a level that I can understand. And I said, as I understand quantum physics, as I understand it, what we basically figure out is that there is no stuff in stuff. And bless his heart, he was nice enough to consider that for a moment. I could kind of hear him thinking out loud of string theory. And then he said, yeah, you're actually right. There is no stuff in stuff. And then in a later conversation, he said, I've been thinking about that question. And he says, there's stuffness to stuff. And that's why we perceive stuff as stuff, is the stuffness to stuff. But there is no stuff in stuff. We're kind of looking that quantum physics is coming around from the other end of the spectrum to find out that solid matter isn't the name of the game.
Definitely, and that's been ever since Max Planck years ago said, I regard consciousness as fundamental, I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. Max Planck said, I regard consciousness as fundamental, I regard matter as derivative from consciousness.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, you know, back even, that was more than 80 years ago when quantum physics began to take off. And we began to really study the nature of matter at its most infinitesimal, almost infinitesimal level, the smallest levels, that we began to see its elusiveness, its almost absences. I mean, there's so much empty space if you consider, you know, the atom and the nucleus and all that. You know, there's just so much empty space there. And it's just, you know, scientists were boggled as they began to get these very, very strange results. And so there's been several, many scientists over the years that have come to the conclusion that consciousness is, in a way, creating our objective experience. And Mary Baker already saw this, even years before quantum physics. That was her basic discovery. She said she began to explain all cause and effect as mental, not physical. That's what she wrote in Science and Hope.
I've got a note here from some other presentations you've done, Amy, that says the three paradigms for the nature of reality.
Yeah.
Is that like off the top of your head? Do you want me to read what you have written?
I can go ahead and go through those three because that's,
I think,
one of the fundamental things when we're talking about the nature of reality, we're talking about things like prayer, we're talking about, you know, the science and religion debate. I think that people, if they're not clear on what these three paradigms for the nature of reality are, then they're not really understanding the arguments that are going back and forth. So I'd just like to, so that our audience is just very clear on this, can I name those three out?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay, so the first paradigm for reality is that all is matter, okay? This is sometimes referred to as naturalism. It's really the fundamental basis to atheism. It's that the universe is entirely made of matter, and that consciousness basically is just derived in a material brain. So an atheist, of course, would believe that, you know, life began when you were born into a material body, and then when life will definitely end, and that's going to be it when the body dies, okay? So that's going to be all is matter. On the other end of the spectrum, you have all is mind. This philosophy is sometimes referred to as idealism, and there are a lot of Eastern religions that believe in idealism. Most Buddhists believe in an idealistic nature of reality. And so in this case, matter becomes a derivative of consciousness. In other words, the fundamental substance of reality is consciousness. And then in the middle, and this is where probably most people lie, you have the philosophy of dualism. So dualism believes that you have two basic forms of substance to reality, that being matter and mind. In other words, that matter is still some reality that's out there apart from us that you can't really necessarily control. But then you also have, usually people that consider themselves to be a dualist, you believe in some sort of spiritual creator. So you're believing that there's some consciousness, some fundamental aspect of consciousness to reality, if you're believing that God is spirit. And then, of course, most monotheistic religions, such as Christianity, Judaism, Islam, they all will believe that spirit, the spirit or God, then created matter and created humans to be put into matter. Okay, so this is dualism, and that's more of the creationist or intelligent design perspective that you're going to hear if you talk about the science and religion debate. So those are really the three again. We have all is matter, we have all is mind, and then you have dualism, which is matter and mind. And it's not necessarily that you fall in one, two, or three. It can sort of be a gradation. I've talked to different people and their beliefs, and so, you know, not necessarily one, two, or three, but you might lie somewhere in the middle of one of these. But just to be clear where Christian Science lies, Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, basically made that paradigm shift from sort of mainstream Christianity, where believing in spirit having created matter, and she began to realize that spirit, yes, is the only cause and creator, but spirit made a purely spiritual creation, made man to be spiritual. And this does not mean that man is, you know, sort of absorbed in some giant spirit and loses individuality, but instead that God had created man, each of us, as individual spiritual ideas to perfectly reflect some unique aspect nature of God. And that the universe and man are then a spiritual creation. And that creation is eternal. It's unchangeable. It's like 1 + 1 = 2. It's just, it's always been, always will be, can't be changed, based on principle, and is as fixed as a spiritual in consciousness, God's divine perfect consciousness, or what we call sometimes God is mind, with a capital M, is a synonym that we'll give to God. So she had a different take on this idealism. Idealism can sort of mean all is matter, all is consciousness, but she really separated out consciousness into two sources which we're very familiar with. We're all, you know, familiar with the proverbial angel on one shoulder and devil on the other shoulder sort of speaking into human consciousness. And when mankind starts to get into idealism and doesn't make that separation between good and evil, then it can become confusing. But what Mary Baker Eddy discovered and what she felt was divine revelation from God was to realize that there were two sources to this human consciousness that we seem to experience. There's a sort of evil source, and there's a good source, and that good source is the divine mind. And so when healing happens in Christian Science and we say all is mental, what we're not doing is looking for a supernatural God to come and change matter. To us, matter is nothing but a subjective derivative of consciousness, this sort of false consciousness of a life separate from God. And so when healing happens, it becomes something that becomes not only natural, it becomes really scientific, because it is the source of wonderfully perfect consciousness of God mind communicating to us. It's this Christ message that comes to us, and it changes our thinking. It changes it. It removes those fears. It changes, it gives us a better understanding of God. It takes away ignorance. And it often also will remove sin, just the ability to reflect God more perfectly is our holiness. It's just an innate holiness that we have. And so healing in Christian Science is far greater than just the physical change. It's this moral regeneration. It's this greater understanding of God. And that's what's so wonderful that Mary Baker Eddy gave to the world, was to understand that that's the source of our being. Our life is in spirit. It's not in this material body. And we're slowly putting that off. And as we do so, we can experience that kingdom of God right here on earth. We can experience that wonderful truth of who we are and who God made us to be.
Wow. That's so many questions. Let me start with an easy one. I grew up in a Protestant church, and a relatively benign and gentle Protestant church, good education. But I grew up with this notion of sin as like a big black mark on your permanent record, just like at school, and that it was just simply that it was a bad thing, and that if you did it, you were a bad thing. What's a Christian Science view of that word sin?
Sin is,
or your view,
you know, that's a very important question. Fundamentally, what's so wonderful about Christian Science is that it tells us that God did not make us and put us into this material body to be sinning mortals. And so that's what's so wonderful. When we realize that God made us to express Him, express His perfection, that's our purpose. That's what's so wonderful. But this material mortal self and looking at the world around us and all the sin that we see in the world around us, we then sort of ask ourselves, well, you know, where did this all come from? And Jesus, you know, had some wonderful answers to that. Also, you know, he separated out and he healed sin so wonderfully when the adulteress was brought before him by, you know, the church of his time. And they said, you know, the law is that we're supposed to stone her. And Jesus saw the repentance in her heart. He knew that she wanted a better life than what she was living. And she was ready to experience that repentance. So there is definitely a need for repentance. But this repentance is not an acceptance in any way of this is who I am. It's rather the opposite. It's realizing, you know what? That's not who God made me to be. And I can put that off. I can put off this sin, this whatever the practice is, whether it's dishonesty or unkindness or whatever it is, you can just, it's a wonderful ability to just sort of say, you know, that's not me. I don't have to be like that. That's not what God made me to be. And that's what's so wonderful about Christian Science, because it gives us that ability to turn to who we are. And sometimes if we feel that we're caught in a sin that we, as Paul sort of said, I do that, which I, you know, I'm doing the things that I don't want to be doing, and I can't sort of stop it. What's so wonderful about Christian Science is that in our daily prayer, we can still affirm daily who we are. Mary Baker already gave us this daily prayer where we're supposed to say, Thy kingdom come, let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me, and rule out of me all sin. She told us as Christian Scientists to pray that daily, because she knew that sin was just not who we are. And she was giving us the ability to demonstrate our more sinless nature, and that we have Jesus as this ideal of really telling us of what we're capable of doing. So that's what's so wonderful.
Phew. I just want to just repeat back for a second that repentance was not just sort of an abject surrender into this is who I am, I'll just live with it, but really is recognizing this is not who I am. This was me being outside of who I am. We're going to break away right now because this is a good place to put it. We just want to identify the station and appreciate the folks that have sponsored and brought this show to you today. And stick around, everybody. We'll be right back with a whole lot more to talk about with Dr. Amy Lang.
San Francisco.
Hey, if you hear that music, you know you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives, a program looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett, your host. I will remind you that we archive a number of Spiritual Perspective programs up on our website, which is ifidknownthen.com. But even more importantly, I want to thank the First Church of Christ Scientists Mill Valley and a contingent of, I think, 50 other churches across a board of 50 other churches who have all come together to sponsor and support and create the Spiritual Perspectives program. You can look and find more information on spirituality.com or christianscience.com, but I also want to give a note that many of the Christian Science churches are now holding services, educational talks on Zoom, and you can find it with the URL. You can look up the individual church websites or our host. You can find under ChristianScienceMillValley.com, all run together, obviously. They do a Wednesday evening at 7:30, and the San Rafael Church also does their Sunday service at 10. Both of those are on Zoom, but you can look up individual churches in your area to find other Zoom events that are going on. Whew, boy, I am just so wound up. Everybody, I want to welcome you back, and again, our guest is Dr. Amy Lang, and we're kind of talking about where our belief in matter meets the reality of our universe, as it were. I don't know, was that just harshly hashed up?
No, that's what we're doing. It's a very bold statement that Mary Baker already made about telling us that really matter was not a creation of God, and that matter was not where our true being is, and that's very bold.
Boy, there's just I'm nerding out on the science, but let me start on the easy part. A lot of people that I've seen along the way that are trying to do a spiritual healing or they're trying to accomplish a healing practice, they end up focused on the wound. I want this owie to go away. I want this owie to go away. I want this owie to go away. What would you say from Mary Baker Eddy's study of the nature of reality? What would you say is the approach that her study shows works? Focusing on the injury?
Definitely not. She said to look away from the body, yeah, into truth and love. So when we're talking about these two sources of consciousness that we seem to be experiencing, this good, really wonderful good consciousness that God has given us, this Christ consciousness, the mind of God, access to what God is thinking. That's one aspect, and that's where Mary Baker Eddy saw the source of healing. The other aspect is that carnal mind, and that's the sort of, I'm living a life separate from God. I have power to myself, maybe to heal myself. And she saw this as the human mind trying to attempt to be its own healer. And that's very deceptive sometimes to think that, you know, we can sort of will a healing. And she definitely identified that as not the way of the healing power of Christ.
Mm-hmm. And so,
we have to be careful.
Focus?
Yeah.
I was just saying, where would I take the focus if it's not, I will you, owie, to be gone?
Right. We have to take that focus to what God is knowing. That's what's so wonderful about Christian Science. When we go to what God is knowing about us, and we learn more about of who we are as his spiritual creation, and we look at those wonderful qualities of God and also our perfection in spirit, that we are an idea that is incapable of experiencing a wound, a hurt, whether it's an accident or whether it's a disease. It's that higher perspective of who God made us to be. And when we begin to see that more clearly, and we discern that with our spiritual senses, and again, it is a process of, she talked about the spiritual senses deal with things like hope and faith, and it gets us to that point of understanding of who we are in spirit. It's that purity of spirit where Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. When we begin to see God and who God is, that's when we begin to understand more who we are. And so it's really turning away from the material body. And you know, again, it's that sort of repentance and renunciation and turning to who we are as spiritual ideas of God. And when we do that, that naturally, it removes the fear. It's feeling God's love. That's a huge part of it, too. But it's also knowing the truth. Jesus said, know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I would say that is much more the process of prayer in Christian Science than focusing on the human body and trying to, in some way, manipulate that human body to be better. Does that make sense?
So I think I get that, Amy. Let me put it this way and see if I've got it. So it's not that we're some human thing trying to cruise through life and we get smunched and dented out of shape and that we're then trying to figure out how to be undented humans. It's more that we're almost having to let go of our confusion that we were dented humans and return back to what we really are?
Yeah, definitely. We're just revealing. It's just a light shining through our consciousness. And that light is there. That light is the truth of who we are. It's that Christ light, and as we just let that shine in our consciousness, we let go of all the lies of who we thought we were.
Almost like we've got a pattern to be drawn back into if we just let go of where we've, like, pulled back from this support system, lattice work, whatever structure pattern? I'm not worried.
Yeah, definitely. I would say it's a divine pattern. It's really God's pure idea of who we are, that it just can never be touched or taken away from us. It's what we're naturally going to go back to no matter what. It's the truth. The truth is ultimately going to prevail over any lie of sickness, disease, discord. All of that is ultimately going to fade away, just as like light displacing the darkness.
So, Amy, I'm thinking that I could think of myself as sort of like a cosmic spring where attention might take the spring and stretch it into a slightly different shape, but as soon as we let go of that external tension, the spring goes back to its original shape. So the process of healing can be letting go of the confusion, the distortion, the whatever, the off-the-markness, and then we can spring back to a given shape?
Yeah, but again, we always want to remember that our fundamental substance is not in matter in any way. It's really a letting go of matter and realizing that we really are spiritual. And when Christian Science healings take place, sometimes they may take a little while to take place, but sometimes they can be instantaneous. That empirical, that those 83,000 healings that I referred to earlier, some will talk about, you know, maybe it took days or a week or month, even a month or some or more to, for the healing to take place. But there's some remarkable ones. For instance, a few decades ago, the church actually did a empirical analysis of Christian Science healing over a 20-year span. And in that case, they found that there were 599 cases of broken bones, and of those, in at least 11 cases, the healing took one day or less. In some cases, there were even x-rays in less than a day that showed the healing of a broken bone completely healed. And so when you look at that type of evidence, how can you believe that matter is this fixed substance that has to heal itself? You begin to realize that there is a spiritual cause to the universe, and that spiritual cause can come right now and have this healing impact that can be so quick and so instantaneous, even as Jesus healed. And Christian Scientists have been able to experience those types of healings in its healing record.
Phew. That's just breathtaking to... that's just breathtaking. So as an engineer-raised kind of kid, I admit that all along the way, I always got curious when they were doing pharmaceutical researches that they work so hard to get rid of the placebo effect. And I have to say, I've always wondered, why are we working so hard to get rid of the placebo effect? Why aren't we studying the so-called placebo effect?
You know, and that's actually where Mary Baker was before she discovered Christian Science. She discovered the placebo effect even back in the 1800s. She found that when she was, you know, she just had an innate sense that she wanted to help people. And we certainly love that motive today in any individual that wants to help and heal humanity. And she had that innate desire, and she would go and before she found Christian Science, she would try to help people. And she found that by taking away the drug and even to the point of just even getting rid of it, but still telling the patient, here, take this and let this help you, and then seeing them healed, she began to realize, you know, what's important here is not the matter in the drug. That's not what's doing the healing. There's not intelligence there that's causing the healing. It's the faith in the drug that was causing the healing. And she began to realize, again, as she said, that all cause and effect is mental and not physical. And it's really a huge paradigm shift. And it's sort of telling us as humanity that if this is really the true nature of reality, we're in the process of seeing this paradigm shift today. It's just taking us a lot longer than, say, an individual like Mary Baker Eddy was able to see it, you know, in the span of a few decades in her lifetime to make that shift from trust in matter to trust in spirit. but it's definitely, she set in thought, this revolution in thought, that humanity is naturally on this track. We're on this track to turn from matter to spirit because, again, it's the truth of who we are.
And not trying to probe into your personal business, Amy, but obviously you've been practicing in this study for a very long time, and so you have to have had, at whatever levels, moments where you turn to this practice for healing, even if it was for a confusion or a difficulty or to finish a thesis. again, not trying to probe into your personal thought process unless that's available, but when you've reached a point of healing, what's been the turning point?
You know, there's been many healings in my life that I can sort of turn to and say, you know, those are pillars in my experience that have taught me that Christian Science heals. One of the most fundamental ones, though, was when I was actually in grad school, and I began to come down with what felt like the stomach flu. I'd experienced it before growing up and had recovered from it, but it always seemed to take a little while. But this healing was so remarkable to me because it was like a Friday afternoon. I had my finals week coming up as in my master's class, and I had to have time to study. And it was just so wonderful because I called a Christian Science practitioner, and this is a support structure in our church that you can call somebody who's gone into the full-time practice of healing, and they're willing to pray with you and help you, sort of like a disciple of Christ today. And you can call them up and ask them to help you. So I did that, and I called this individual, and she agreed to pray with me. And I still remember it. It was in the middle of the night, and it was one moment I was in bed, and I just was in agony, physical agony, just not feeling well at all. And there was just suddenly this complete shift in my whole being that the pain just completely wiped off. I mean, it was just gone. It was just a shift in thought. And suddenly I went from feeling this amount of this great pain to just being completely well. And I knew it was the effect of prayer. And that was really a pillar for me in my demonstration of Christian Science. I've had other healings, maybe not quite as instantaneous as that one, but I've definitely had moments where I have felt God's love, I have felt His care for me, and I know that Christian Science is reliable, and it has brought me and many family members through wonderful demonstrations of healing.
And so you just said, Amy, there was a shift in thought. When that happens, are you able to catch what thought was stuck and released, or what thought was off track that came on track? Or when it's gone, is it just gone?
It's more that it's just gone, and you just don't feel the fear and the pain anymore, because Mary Baker explained that, you know, these feelings we have of pain and fear, those are all in that aspect of the carnal mind. And the Christ just comes into consciousness, and it just washes it away. It's that baptism of thought. Sometimes it can be very quick. Sometimes it can be more gradual. But the Christ is always there. It's always something that we can rely upon. It's the true nature of who we are, and it's God telling us that He loves us. And we just have to yield to that. And that yielding is sort of like, you know, as an engineer, I think of that, you know, a chain being put in tension, and maybe you don't know the exact moment when that chain will break as it's put in tension more and more. But the more you just pour in that truth into consciousness and just yield to God, at some moment that error is just going to be gone. It's just going to, it's the light that destroys the darkness.
I never thought of confusion and dis-ease as being destructive testing. I don't like it. So one piece that I like to hit in the Spiritual Perspectives programs each time, and I'm not looking for any institutional definition, but for you personally, Amy, what's your actual definition of the word prayer or pray? How do you get to it, and how do you know when you got there?
To me, prayer is any time that you're turning away from what the material senses are trying to claim as the truth of who you are, and you realize and say, okay, I'm going to turn away from that, and I'm going to turn to God. And we can do that turning to God in many ways. We can just ask God. Jesus said that we knock and we seek the kingdom of God. That can be a form of prayer. It can be an affirmation of who we are. We can sometimes use a hymn or Bible verses or even verses from the book Science and Health. that tell us of who we are. The definition of man in science and health is just so wonderful. It says man is not made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements, but man is spiritual. And so we turn to those truths maybe that we have and hold and love to. Or sometimes it can just be sort of going into that closet and just listening, just quieting all the material senses, sometimes even closing our eyes, and just listening to what God has to say, because God is constantly telling us how much he loves us and who we are.
Hmm. Wow. I'm just gobbling this up and having to take a moment to digest periodically. There's a fun reference in some of the other materials I was looking at as I was getting ready, because we're really discussing the nature of, we're discussing what's real about reality. Is that a fair thing to say?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And that we've had, like, a confusion. Sometimes it's tricky to remember that Western science has only been king of the world for a very short period of time compared to how long people have been doing things and studying things. And if we were to measure Western science up against, say, yoga, the original yogas, it's like a little baby thing, that belief system about Western science. But there's a place where we've got a medical doctor, Eben Alexander. Can you talk a little bit about Eben Alexander's interesting discoveries and how he got there?
Yeah, so we're talking now about near-death experiences. Eben Alexander
was a neurosurgeon, right?
Yeah, had an experience, I guess it was about 10 years ago or so now, where he's a medical doctor, and he basically, had this disease that attacked the function of his mind, his brain, and he was, taken to the hospital and basically declared brain dead. And he had an experience where he didn't just have life suddenly end. He had this whole experience that he felt was ultimately later documented as a near-death experience, and came back and he realized that what material medicine, Western medicine had taught him, that consciousness is generated in material brain, he began to really doubt that as being the nature of reality that he had been taught in medical school. And he has made a complete shift, as we talked about those three paradigms for reality earlier. He made a complete shift from maybe more on the side of all is matter, or maybe a little bit of dualism. Maybe he had some faith in God before that. Maybe he'd gone to church. I think his family had gone to church. And he then shifted all the way to the other side, that all is mind, that we live in an entirely mental universe. And so that near-death experience for him caused that paradigm shift. Yeah, so certainly a very interesting point. He said, my story breaks the back of the last efforts of reductive science to tell the world that the material realm is all that exists, and that consciousness or spirit, yours and mine, is not the great and central mystery of the universe. I'm living proof.
That spirit is the central mystery of the universe.
Yeah, so the material realm, he says, material science tells us that the material realm is all that exists.
Yes.
And that consciousness or spirit, yours and mine, he said, that for, material science says that's a great mystery that we're never going to really solve. It is generated in consciousness. And he said, no. He said, consciousness, even though we consider it mysterious, that's the fundamental nature of the universe. And he felt that his experience that he went through came back and showed proof that, you don't need a material mind to generate consciousness.
Whew. It's funny. I have this picture in my head of a child toy that was called Play-Doh, and I don't even know if it still existed. But it was this sort of odd version of clay that you could stretch and do stuff and goof around with it and put it in all kinds of different shapes. But then when you were done with it, at least in my household, my mother taught me to make sure I put it back in its original container that was sort of egg-shaped. And I remember being sort of fascinating that after I had shaped it in all these different shapes, when I came back to play with it again to get it out of its container, it had adapted to the shape of the egg, and it was now back to its, call it, original shape as it was originally delivered. And I'm finding myself thinking of material matter being sort of like this Play-Doh, and consciousness being, or more to the point, God, and God consciousness, God mind, the one, love, being the egg that if we just quit getting stretched out of shape, we go back to that original shaping.
Yeah, our original nature is fundamentally in spirit. And the more we understand that, the more Mary Bickerty, you know, challenged us and told us that we can understand God and who we are. And that just naturally, just like the beauty of a flower, when we look at a flower out in nature and say how beautiful it is, what is the source of that beauty and goodness that we see, you know, in a flower that as it buds and blooms? We give that source to be God. And we can let God take care of the human body in the same way that it clothes that beautiful lily of the field. And that's just what Jesus said.
I am not finding it in my notes, Amy, but so I'm not going to reference this accurately, but I remember reading that you started to establish a program where you teach that's exploring this beyond physical nature of reality.
Yeah, I've developed an Honors College class where I challenge students basically to write an essay and discuss a lot of these issues. We look at things like we've mentioned here, the placebo effect, near-death experiences, quantum physics. We look at all the evidence out there, and we talk about these three major paradigms for reality. And then we ask the question, are we in the middle of a scientific revolution? One of the books that we actually read in the class is by Thomas Kuhn, and I should mention him as we're talking about this, you know, being in a scientific revolution. But he wrote a book back in the mid-20th century where he basically began to understand that as science goes through these revolutionary phases, it's not just sort of a gradual thing necessarily. He saw discontinuities in the development of sciences, and he coined this term paradigm shift, which is a fundamental change in basic assumptions and practices in sciences. And so when you understand what he put forward, that basically you have what we call this, you know, Western medicine and Western materialistic science, and that's been a paradigm, scientific paradigm that's been prevalent now for, you know, well over a century, and we get this normal problem-solving process that goes into play, and then you start to get evidence that becomes anomalous to that. So when I talked about, for instance, a broken bone being healed in less than a day, yeah, you know, that would be evidence that would be anomalous to this fundamental nature of matter and what we believe matter to be. And so then you get a competing paradigm that can account for this evidence. And then at some point, because the competing paradigm has a better explanation of the evidence, you get this paradigm shift. And he called this the structure of scientific revolutions. Mm. And so I think it's really interesting. We talk about that process and we consider all this evidence, and the students have to write an essay and sort of discuss all this. So it's a fun class.
And how's that been received by other faculty?
For the most part, the Honors College has been really happy about me offering a class because it really forces students to become respectful of those with other and differing views. That's a very big part of the class, to be respectful towards others and what they believe. And also have these critical thinking skills and be willing to consider and sort of understand what other people believe, not necessarily meaning that you're going to change your view, but that you at least are not going forward and putting forth your view without understanding what other people believe. And so that's really a big part of the class.
Nice. And how's the reception been among students and registration? Is this a credit class, or is this a sort of supplemental interests?
It's in the Honors College, and so students who are Honors College students can take the class. Yeah. So I've had some wonderful enrollment and discussions in the class. It's been really a great time.
Very cool. I love that. So you're, in a funny way, quantum physics from one side of the equation is starting to bring in a lot of questions about the nature of reality, and you're kind of coming all the way around full circle from the other side and, like, you know, wedging open the thought processes and getting things more mainstream.
Definitely. I mean, we just want to look at all the evidence and say, if we consider all this evidence and then we consider the paradigms for reality, which paradigm that we've talked about, you know, really fits all the evidence the best? And I let students express their views, and we all discuss it. But obviously, in my view, I feel that that Christian Science has sort of answered all these questions that humanity is seeking and searching for, And yet Mary Baker Eddy gave us this revelation that, from God, that really explains the nature of reality, explains the nature of matter, and gives us that promise and path of salvation that Jesus had already demonstrated 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because we're on radio, for those of you that want to go learn more about it, Thomas Kuhn, the last name is spelled K like Kevin, U-H-N. Just because I was pointing to it, and it dawned on me, nobody could see that.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing I should mention is that there's one other thing we bring up in the class is that it's not just Christian Scientists that have had these healings. You know, in the past century or so, there's a wonderful record of healings in Christianity. There's a book by Craig Keener. He's a professor of the New Testament at Asbury Theological Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky. And he wrote a book a few years ago called Miracles, the Credibility of the New Testament Accounts. And in this book, which is a two-volume book, he claims that hundreds of millions of people today claim to have experienced miracles. And, you know, and he gives accounts of things like, you know, vocal cords completely being restored. One person had a surgical removal of his stomach and experienced both recovery and formation of a new stomach.
Whoa.
So these are, you know, pretty remarkable. Some of these healings that he accounts are pretty remarkable also in their own respect.
Phew. Everybody, we're talking with Dr. Amy Lang. You can look her up and find out more about her. But Amy, I am hoping that you'll be willing to come back and talk to us again. This is, I am just like feeling like I barely had an appetizer and now I'm really hungry. I appreciate you so much, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And for everybody out there, thank you for listening to Spiritual Perspectives, and I want to ask you two favors, if you would. Everybody, please treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are, and just notice no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.